What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I'm Commander Shepard, and this is my favorite lorecast on the Citadel.
Welcome to the Mass Effect Lorecast, the podcast where we explore the vast lore behind the Mass Effect games.
Specters, welcome back to the Mass Effect Lorecast. This is Tom. I'm here with Sam, as always. And Sam, we've been talking about a lot about Liara lately. Why do I want to butcher her name? Liara.
My name is Liara.
Liara. We've been talking about her a lot lately, and we've clearly got more to discuss. But I see here in the notes, you've got this little side episode. It's kind of tangentially related to Liara. Like, where are we going? What are we doing today?
Yeah, it is. You know, I brought it up, I think, last week or the week before that. I was racking my brain to see what kind of topics we could come up with that were like Liara, but not Liara. And so we'll start with a key one today. Maybe make a sub-series of episodes out of these, but today we're going to be talking about Ilos. It's arguably one of the most important ruins in the whole game.
So this is like Planet Card the episode.
Yes, this is Planet Card. You can just go ahead and chant it now.
Planet Card the episode. Okay, but you're talking about ruins. You didn't say Prothean ruins. Most of the ruins we find are Prothean ruins, right? Like, this is different?
You're right. And now I feel like I may have spoiled the surprise because I think I may have said Prothean before. But you're right that I meant to leave that out. I don't know. I'll have to go back and check. But
I was too busy thinking about the... So we have our show notes here. There's a little behind the scenes baseball. We have show notes and little script things that are all written out. Of course, I'm sure you guys can tell. But I was too busy. Sometimes we both improv. We add a little bit. We don't always keep directly to the script. And I was thinking about the whole Planet Card joke, and so I don't know if you actually said I'm sure we can scroll back and listen again, but anyway,
you're right that I meant to leave out Prothean, because that's because we are initially told that Ilos is a Prothean ruin, but we actually find out that it's older than that. It's older than Prothean.
That's freaking old.
Pre-Forerunner race, yes. We'll get to that a little bit later. But to set the stage, I want people who are listening to this right now to think about, let's think back to visiting Ilos in Mass Effect 1. And, you know, there are all these screenshots that we have from the Mass Effect Wiki. Thank you to the curators of that wiki. They help us with these visual aids sometimes. But they... entire planet has such a unique feel to it, right? Because it looks like there's this green filter over it, first of all, mm-hmm. and it
kind,
looks
it's kind
old.
Of Fallout 3 ish with the oh, with
yes,
the green
the
color
filter, yes.
Yeah, the piss filter. But yeah, no, like it's yeah, it does have this, like, everything looks like it was overgrown a long time ago, and it's like it just looks ancient.
It is old. Everything yeah. about Ilo says old. It's like it looks like it was high tech at one point, right? But then obviously the people who made it high tech vanished. And then it's got this eerie feeling because it is very clearly the ruins of an ancient civilization that was sprawling. That was like, you know, this is not just a small village.
Right.
And yet we're walking through this area and there's no one around, right? There's only Geth and Saren and us. And it's so different from like the Citadel, where that is very contemporary, right? And there's yeah. still a lot of people around there. But this one is, you know, it kind of looks like the Forerunners in Halo, you know, that kind of archaeology or mm-hmm. Architecture rather, very angular, looks like old high tech, kind of retro high tech feeling,
with a lot of like concrete too. A lot of these like
yes.
like what's the art style? There's a style of building construction from like the 70s that has an aggressive sounding name. I always forget the name of it.
It's not Art Deco, right?
No, Deco is older than that. It looks a lot like this. It's big concrete buildings. A lot of the big buildings in like Russia, for example, brutalism. There you go. Thank you, PK in chat. Brutalist. It looks very brutalist in that it's simple shapes and made out of concrete with very simple, like, non-organic looking structures. So meaning lots of rectangles, lots of like even the walkways have those like very simple rectangular shaped like handrails around the edges. The windows and doorways are all very just rectangular. It all looks like a game that was made in the year 2000 because they couldn't put enough polygons in it, right? But we know that there are structures. We know that there are structures in Mass Effect, like you mentioned the Citadel, where there are these like rounded shapes and everything feels a little bit more sci-fi or modern or whatever. Where this comes across very brutalist. But
honestly, yeah. This one reminded me of. Did you ever watch the Alien series? Did you ever watch yeah. Prometheus?
I haven't seen Prometheus. Yes, but
okay.
I've seen so screenshots and things. I think I have a sense of what you're explaining.
This one felt like that. And part of the reason is because it is this critical Act 3 beat change in the narrative of Mass Effect 1, right? It's where we learn so many crucial lore points thanks to this Prothean VI that was left behind. We meet him. His name's Vigil. And here's some of what he tells us the Protheans were doing on Ilos.
Ilos was a top secret facility. Here, researchers worked to create a small-scale version of a mass relay, one that linked directly to the Citadel, the hub of the relay network.
The conduit is not a weapon. It is a backdoor onto the Citadel.
How did you manage to stay hidden?
All official records of our project were destroyed in the initial attack on the Citadel. While the Prothean Empire came crashing down, Ilos was spared. We severed all communication with the outside, and our facility went dark. The personnel retreated underground into these archives. To conserve resources, everyone was put into cryogenic stasis. I was programmed to monitor the facility and wake the staff when the danger had passed. But the genocide of an entire species is a long, slow process. Years passed, decades, centuries. The Reapers persisted, and my energy reserves were dwindling.
You should have fought.
We were a few hundred against a galactic invasion fleet. Our only hope was to remain undetected.
I love that Shepard answer. You should have fought. Like, I know nothing else about the specifics of your situation. But why didn't you fight?
Like, but that's kind of, you know, that's kind of typical, right?
Yeah.
Like, that is how, you know, a typical military service member may think, like, well, why didn't you fight? God damn it.
Right. Yeah. Well, maybe there was something else going on that made that not as easy as it sounds. Yeah. So I know you like the planet cards. I guess we should go over this kind of like a planet card, right?
Right. Well, you know, Ilos has a planet card because it is, in fact, a planet. And here's the description of the planet card. Now, I want listeners to remember this next description because it's going to come in key later in this episode. I have one hell of a theory about Ilos. So remember this next part. Here's the description. In the golden age of the Protheans, Ilos was a verdant world dotted with spires and arches of magnificent cities. Even casual observation shows this is no longer the case. Ilos has been devastated by means unknown, its entire surface changed to the color of rust. The atmosphere shows heightened levels of oxygen. Wildfires, presumably ignited by lightning strikes, can be seen burning on the dark side. This indicates that most, if not all, respirating animal life forms have died off. Surface gravity is a comfortable 1.17 standard Gs.
Standard Gs.
Couple of things.
Yeah.
Couple of things about that one. By means unknown. It tells us that Ilos has been devastated by means unknown. Okay, well, we are led to believe that this is from the Reapers, right?
Yeah, I mean,
but that, it doesn't.
That's a reasonable assumption, sure.
But it doesn't specify.
Right.
And it doesn't specify anything like other planet cards do. Like there was one planet, I can't remember the name right now, but it was scarred by a mass accelerator cannon. Mm. And there's other planets where it definitely more strongly alludes to a military encounter that happened.
Right.
Where orbital bombardments targeted population centers. And then, you know, about Ilos, we actually later learn that the Reapers forgot about this planet. The Reapers were never even there.
Yeah.
They forgot about the Prothean researchers who were there.
Interesting. So because, yeah, so if they weren't there, also there's no evidence of any fighting that happened. So now we just have a puzzle, right? Like what was going on?
Right. What the hell happened to Ilos? We don't know. Like, we know that it was this, you know, jungle planet, basically, and it was very well colonized with magnificent cities. But now that's not the case. And there are wildfires. There's heightened levels of oxygen. It looks like this planet has gone through accelerated global warming, basically.
Hmm.
And now there's not even any respirating animal life.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it definitely sets up a puzzle. It sounds like they're giving us the pieces to try to put together something, but it's definitely different than what we would expect.
Yes, absolutely. And it's so weird, right? Because this is something we'll touch a little bit later, but we also know that Ilos is named after the Greek name of the founder of Troy.
Mm-hmm. Okay. This,
the legendary city of Troy.
Right, right. Which and was thought of as being just a mythological city, wasn't actually a real location until, what was that, a few decades ago, 60, 70 years ago, whatever that was, where they actually discovered the remnants of a city that absolutely matched the description of Troy. And so now most archaeologists believe that that is the city of Troy. It actually existed.
But for millennia, right,
yeah,
there was only secondhand accounts of Troy.
Right, right.
And
yeah, 2,000 years of history said, like, oh, well, it probably doesn't really exist. It's just in the stories.
Much is the same case for Ilos. And it's so interesting because for Ilos, we learn from Javik that Ilos was mostly considered myth. But yet the Codex in Mass Effect says, quote, like the ancient human city of Troy, Ilos is a world known only through secondhand sources. References to Ilos have been found at several other Prothean ruins though direct study of the world is unlikely to occur.
Okay. So the Protheans either were involved or at least knew about it.
Right. They were, it was a top secret science facility on Ilos, right?
Yeah.
And so it was, you know, kept so secret that most Protheans didn't even know about it. And then apparently few records of it existed in the first place. So when those were destroyed, the Reapers didn't know about it. And then the Reapers forgot about it and they left. And I find this really interesting because no one has direct knowledge. So Shepard's official report of Shepard's Spectre mission to Ilos would be the only official contemporary record. Mm-hmm. Of anyone going to Ilos, what it looks like, what it was like there, how many animal life, you know, And these details would be so highly sought after by people exactly like Liara.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, absolutely. So this is the connection to Liara. Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of like, for example, the Mayan ruins or, you know, like these like American civilizations that died off or were killed off or whatever. And then hundreds of years later, we have reports from like explorers, European explorers, most likely, about, you know, oh, deep in this forest, there's this these stepped pyramids and all of this wackiness, but they have no idea where they're from and all of that. It feels very similar to that, right? Like stumbling onto some sort of ancient thing and just not even knowing a whole lot about it. And everyone else has forgot about it or didn't ever know that it existed.
And yet the reason why Shepard stumbles upon it is because of a very highly classified mission. So these records in Shepard's Spectre report are unlikely to be declassified for years and years and years. So that, you know, kind of leads me to thinking you got to bring Liara here with you. Like you have to.
Right, right. Yeah, she would love it. Yeah.
Yeah. And the next part of the codex is also interesting. It says, Ilos lies in a remote area of the Terminus systems only accessible by the legendary Mu Relay. 4,000 years ago, the Mu Relay was knocked out of position by a supernova and then lost. Since then, Ilos and its cluster have been inaccessible.
Right, because we've talked about this before. Unless you're close enough to one of the relays, you are in a part of the galaxy that is probably not traversed by the races and civilizations that we're aware of. So I guess they had access to it at one time, but then they no longer did about 4,000 years ago. Everything was cut off.
And so it's a planet that is shrouded in mystery, not just because it's been inaccessible for so long, but also because there's been this massive ecological shift that no one quite knows about. And the only people besides Saren and the Geth who were able to go there were Shepard and Shepard's crew.
Yeah.
This is an intriguing planet, especially to come so early in the series in Mass Effect 1. There's been so much basically lore written about this planet that I didn't even realize at first glance, because as even a diehard player, I was so used to going through the game and just hitting all the major story planets, right? And Ilos is one of those planets you gotta go to.
Yeah.
Right. And yet you land there, you're like, oh, cool, jungle planet. Oh, I guess people used to be here anyway.
Right, right. Yeah, this looks like ruins of buildings that people lived in. Cool. Let's keep going. Yeah.
Yeah. And apparently Ilos has drawn the attention of higher education naturally, right? Because it's so shrouded in mystery, kind of like the Titanic almost. Occasionally, the Codex says, a university will organize an expedition to chart a route to Ilos using conventional faster-than-light drives. These never get beyond the planning stages due to the distance and the danger. The journey could take years or decades, passing through the hostile Terminus systems and dozens of unexplored systems. And of course, we know there's tons of pirates along the way. Sure. Batarians would be very happy to get their hands on some valuable scientific research gear.
Right. Yeah. So it makes sense that Shepard and the Normandy would be finding something that nobody else has been able to make it to yet. That's pretty cool. Well, this is a fun, intriguing mystery. I know you've got some other details here that we're going to get to in a little bit, but we have a mid break and a planet card. This is a planet card on top of a planet card.
Play the Inception foghorn music now. Planet card within a planet card. And this one is another Prothean ruin. So
it's a big one. So don't go anywhere.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Message coming in. Patching it through.
I am sovereign, and this
Lorecast
is mine. I like the sound of that.
All right, here we are in the middle of the show. Thank you so much for all of your support, all of you, especially our patrons. And if you are interested in helping give back to the show, if we're helping get you get through your workday, your commute, your workout, visiting your in-laws, whatever it is, and you want to say thanks, head over to patreon.com/MassEffectLoreCast. Go check out all the different tiers, all the things you can get, ad-free episodes, t-shirts, stickers, and things like that. Also, you can get shouted out every week, like our Shepherd tier patrons, Ed Boy, Kira C, Lieutenant Tosino, and William. Thank you so much for your support as well. If you are interested in helping in other ways, you can leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. We'll read out your words on a future episode of the show. Or you can rate the show on Spotify, or you can share it with your friends or your in-laws if they like Mass Effect, which they probably don't. But, you know, share it anyway. All right, let's get to the planet card. Who are we where are we going with this planet card? We're just zooming all over the galaxy today.
Oh, boy, this one's my favorite. This is my favorite side planet in all of Mass Effect, the entire series. This is Elitania. Elitania appears to be a world eminently suited for colonization. Sadly, appearances are deceiving. It is covered by a verdant... Oh, there's that word again. It is covered by a verdant carpet of mosses.
Isn't it pronounced verdant? Yeah, I think it's verdant.
I thought it was verdant.
I don't know. Maybe chat can educate us on maybe the proper pronunciation.
Maybe like some wires are crossing in my brain from like when I learned French, because the French pronunciation of that would definitely be Verdun.
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 With a at the end somewhere. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes. So it is covered by a verdant carpet of mosses, algae, and lichen, and possesses a thick oxygenated atmosphere. But the animal kingdom is a web of microscopic symbiotic creatures. These are impossible to filter from the air and necessary for the native life to thrive. Unfortunately, they also cause anaphylactic shock when inhaled by non-native life.
Nice.
In short, settlement requires either fully sealed environmental suits or replacement of the entire world's ecosystem.
One of those is easier than the other.
Yeah, just a little bit. Some have proposed limited colonization at altitudes above the symbiote's range or in areas where favorable winds keep the air clear. This is so interesting because it is one of those Goldilocks planets that harbors life. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And yet this life is toxic to pretty much any of the Milky Way races.
It's only good for its own type of life. Everything else won't work there.
Right. But it's also the planet where people might remember the name Elitania, because there are Prothean ruins dotting this planet. And one of them is a Prothean sphere, or as I like to call it, the orb.
The orb,
all hail orb, is key if you have received a critical little trinket from the Asari consort on the Citadel. And here's where, like, it is such a tangential kind of random interaction that you would not expect to come in here. But if you have this little trinket from the consort and you insert it into the orb, then Shepard is granted a vision, and this is one of the only visions, if not the only one, that comes from a side mission in all of Mass Effect 1 through 3.
Yeah. Okay.
And it's not the typical, that violent kind of Prothean beacon vision where you see the CPU drilled into the computer breast or the chicken breast.
Yes, right.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's not that one. It's a text-based vision. And this is like an old school RPG text-based adventure.
You know what's funny? Side note. My co-host Lotus of Doom and I do the Elder Scrolls Lorecast. And in the last episode we did last night, we were talking about going through Elder Scrolls 1 arena, where you are contacted telepathically by the bad guy every time you finish one of the main quest points. So I started calling it brain mail. This is kind of like brain mail, but in Mass Effect.
You've got brain.
Yeah.
This is brain mail for Shepard. And so let's talk about the vision that it gives you. I'm going to read the text-based vision that it gives you in its entirety, because this is very important. It's so important for the lore. I literally cannot believe that they hit it in such a tangential way on a side planet.
We could take turns reading this. It's pretty long if you want.
I agree. I think we should go graph by graph here.
Okay, so here, why don't I start us off, because you just read a bunch and then we'll take turns. Examining the strange Prothean artifact reveals a small, irregular slot on the underside of the surface. Remembering the strange trinket you received from the Asari consort on the Citadel, you pull it out and place it into the slot. The ball explodes in a brilliant flash of white light, momentarily blinding and disorienting you, or disorienting, not teeting, just ting. Words are hard. Sorry, go ahead.
Slowly, your senses return as you wake from a deep sleep. You are alone in the forest, though you're not far from the caves you share with the others of your tribe. There is a pain and a small lump in the back of your skull, as if a chip of flint has been forced under the surface of the skin.
Leaning on your bone-tipped spear for support, you rise to your feet. A sound draws your attention upwards, where a strange creature hovers above you. It is unlike the birds you hunt by the lake's edge. It has no head and no wings, yet somehow it flies. It is a beast of shining silver, hanging motionless in the sky like a cloud. You sense it is watching you, studying you.
Raising a hairy fist. Bunga bunga. I love that line. Okay. Raising a hairy fist, you shake your spear at it in anger, and the creature rises up quickly until it disappears from view. With a satisfied grunt, satisfied grunt, you make your way back to the caves and the rest of the tribe.
You fall into the familiar patterns of life. You hunt for food. You struggle to claim and keep a mate. The battles against other tribes that would claim your territory. Days roll into nights and back into days. Each time you rise from sleep, there is the sensation that you are not alone, that some other is with you, sharing all you see, hear, and feel. At these times, your hand goes to this strange lump at the back of your skull, and you remember the silver creature in the sky.
The air grows colder. Winter falls. You must range farther, for food, clutching the furs tight against you to ward off the chill. It is on one of these long hunts that the strange bird returns. You hear it before you see it, its call a deafening roar as it descends from above, swooping down on you. A single great eye opens on the underbelly, a glowing red orb. You try to run, but a finger of red light extends from the eye and engulfs you, and all goes black again.
You wake an instant later and find yourself on Elitania, laying on your back. The Prothean artifact looming above you undamaged, and your companions standing over you. They help you to your feet, puzzled. There was a flash of light, and you just sort of toppled over, one explains. Are you okay, Shepard? The other asks.
You don't answer right away, wondering at the implications of what you've seen. The memories of a Cro-Magnon hunter captured by an implanted Prothean data recorder. How long did they study the primitive humans, observing them, and analyzing the results at their base on Mars? And what, if anything, did they learn from us?
I'm fine. You finally reply, realizing it is a mystery you will probably never solve. Forget about it. That's the best male Shepard voice I could do.
Yeah. Well, it's good. It's a good one. And basically what we're learning from this is that Mass Effect has canonized ancient aliens.
Yes. Yes. Which with all the buzz about aliens over the last year with the discovery of the little bodies and all of that, this has been in the news. People have been talking about how our bodies are so weird compared to other animals because aliens came to the planet and forced our evolution in specific directions or whatever, right? But this plays right into those ideas. And it's right here in this text box, basically.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is not, some kind of debatable narrative. This is definitely proof, the earliest proof in Mass Effect that we see that the Protheans were monitoring early humans, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And my thought is, In along the lines of ancient aliens, could this be the origin of religion in the Mass Effect universe?
Oh, very, very much possible. Yeah, it's very possible.
Because it is for the Asari, right? They worship this goddess of fame, right? And we go to the temple on Thessia, and so many of the early mythological religious references for the Asari are definitely because of Prothean intervention early in their evolution.
Yeah, that's crazy. This stuff is so crazy because as much actual data you could get about this and evidence, it's so intrinsic in the population that you would never convince everybody to give up their faith because of the nature of faith, right? Like, even if you have all this evidence, people would be like, yeah, whatever. That's really not what happened.
And here's the other thing that I want to point out here. This is not just mentioning a Prothean visiting humans. It mentions the Prothean first in terms of the silver thing in the sky and the lump at the back of the neck with the data recorder. If you pay close attention, though, the Cro-Magnon mistakes the Prothean's return, and it's not a Prothean. It says, you hear it before you see it. Its call a deafening roar as it descends from above, swooping down on you. A single great eye opens on the underbelly, a glowing red orb. You try to run, but a finger of red light extends from the eye and engulfs you. That's a Reaper.
Yeah, yeah. So Earth is being visited Reaper, by both.
And not just that, but this is proof that the narrative that the Reapers only killed species that were spacefaring is bullshit. They're lying.
Well, maybe. But were they killing Earthlings or were they studying Earthlings? Was this an investigation to see at what stage of our evolution we were at rather than an effect? Like,
I don't know.
They were attacking the planet and just wiping out the population and decimating us back to an earlier time and then restarting our civilization over or whatever. Or maybe they were just collecting specimen for study.
Maybe. I mean, but typically when we see the Reapers annihilate things with that laser, it's not the same as them sending down the Reaper ground troops to harvest, you know, the beings and put them like the collectors did.
Right.
I still think that, you know, the Reapers didn't obviously annihilate all Cro-Magnons and all early humans at the time. But I think that this is something that shows the Reapers were willing to make exceptions to their rule of harvesting spacefaring species or not.
Yeah.
In this case, I think it's because this human had evidence of the Protheans.
Oh, maybe.
And had they lived long enough, it may have been discovered in their remains.
Mm-hmm.
And then humans later would have been able to reverse engineer that technology. So the Reapers wanted to be able to control human evolution. But again, this text-based vision is so important because it shows not only were the Protheans monitoring early humans, but also that Reapers had made contact with Earth while Cro-Magnons walked the soil.
Yeah. Yeah. Sorry, my dog's being like funny. He's like walking around barking at everybody. Like the other dog and all that. But yeah, it's purposely a little bit vague, but maybe you're right. Maybe you're right. I would love to hear what our audience thinks. So please chime in, comment, let us know what you think about this. Anything else on this before we head back to the rest of the previous planet card?
No. You know, like, you will see how this comes full circle. I promise. Just stick around to the end. We're going to get into my theory about Ilos.
All right, here we go. Let's head back to the rest of the show.
Spit it out, or are you trying to build suspense?
You're so dense, sir. Obviously, I do not know as much about human relationships as I thought.
All right, so back to Ilos. Let's talk about the greater importance in the contemporary story of Mass Effect here.
Right. You know, more or less, it matters now to Shepard because the Prothean researchers on Ilos, they basically saved, you know, humanity, the Asari, the Turians. Everyone in the contemporary Milky Way has a shot at survival because of those Prothean researchers on Ilos. And it goes back to what Vigil tells us. Vigil tells us that the Reapers were retreating through the relay to dark space. The Reapers, they were gone. They forgot about Ilos. They were leaving. And right as they were doing that, that's when the energy was running out to preserve these scientists. So what happened to the scientists who were in cryostasis? Well, let's listen in.
I began to disable the life support of non-essential personnel. First support staff, then security. One by one, their pods were shut down to conserve energy. Eventually, only the stasis pods of the top scientists remained active. Even these were in danger of failing when the Reapers finally retreated back through the Citadel relay.
There were hundreds of stasis pods out there. You just shut them down? You killed them?
You were programmed to protect them, not kill them.
This outcome was not completely unforeseen. My actions were a result of contingency programming entered on my creation.
I bet they didn't tell the non-essential staff about this contingency.
I saved key personnel. When the Reapers retreated, the top researchers were still alive. My actions are the only reason any hope remains. When the researchers woke, they realized the Prothean species was doomed. There were only a dozen individuals left, far too few to sustain a viable population. Yet they vowed to find some way to stop the Reapers from returning. A way to break the cycle forever. And they knew the Keepers were the key.
I still don't understand what's going on here. Why is Saren trying to find the Conduit?
The Conduit gives him access to the Citadel and the Keepers. The Keepers are controlled by the Citadel. Before each invasion, a signal is sent through the station compelling the Keepers to activate the Citadel relay.
There's so much that's revealed in this conversation.
It is so huge. This conversation is like the pivotal lore turning point for Mass Effect. Like, you could boil Mass Effect 1 down to two conversations, right? The first one being the reveal of Sovereign at Saren's base on Vermeer, and then this conversation. This conversation, though, is so important because right after he says that, we learn that these scientists... They eventually make modification to that signal the Keepers are receiving from the Reapers. The Keepers and the Reapers.
Right.
And they get to the Citadel to make this modification using the Conduit. The Conduit is a reverse engineered mass relay that these 12 scientists did. I mean, holy shit, right?
Right.
To our knowledge, this has never been done before in the history of the Milky Way. I'm millions of years prior, thousands of cycles of species rising up and then getting harvested. It has never been done, to our knowledge. And yet these 12 Protheans do it. And then they go through the Conduit.
Yeah.
And they alter the signal that the Reaper or that the Keepers are getting. And that means that the Reapers cannot flood through the Citadel like they did in the Prothean cycle countless times before them. And the Reapers' main game plan is basically trash. They cannot launch this invasion where they cut the head off the snake to start.
Right. This shows how much of a threat the Protheans were to the Reapers. It shows how capable they were and how close they came to actually stopping them.
I mean, really, yeah. They were like a razor's thin edge away. Had they realized that they could have done this before the invasion happened, I bet you the Protheans would have been the cycle to stop the Reapers.
Yeah.
But what's more is that it ultimately bought the Milky Way a few more critical years to get prepared. But for the researchers, it meant a one-way trip. It was a one-way trip from the Conduit to the Citadel. They were the last of their species, as far as they knew, right? And so they knowingly doomed themselves for this Hail Mary attempt that wouldn't even benefit them. Mm-hmm. Like, it would benefit the next cycle, and they knew that.
Right.
And they wouldn't even see the results of this. So it's a totally selfless act that they were willing to do out of desperation, nevertheless. And the Citadel was heavily damaged by that point. It was the focal point, the ground zero for the Reaper invasion, and all traces of organic life had been harvested. So Vigil tells us that the researchers probably starved to death after they altered the Keeper's signal.
Right. Okay, so you said Ilos is older than the Protheans, right? So what was there before?
Right, yeah, we mentioned that at the beginning, and that is true. Ilos, as a colonized place, is older than the Protheans. It was a race called the Inusanan, and I think we've only mentioned this in the Lorecast once or twice before. Mm-hmm. So the Inusanan were there before the Protheans, and we learn that the Protheans colonized the planet after the Inusanan, of course, because the Inusanan were from the previous cycle, but the Protheans colonized on top of the Inusanan ruins.
Right. Okay, so who were the Inusanan again?
They were this spacefaring race from the cycle before the Protheans, and the Reapers wiped all of them out, too. In essence, they are the Protheans of the Protheans.
Right, okay, right? Yeah.
So, and it's because of them that the Protheans learned about Mass Effect physics and developed FTL technology. Mm-hmm. So the Protheans are standing on the shoulders of giants, so to speak, right? Yeah. And they are learning the Mass Effect technology, the FTL technology, because of the Inusannan. And that puts the Protheans ahead of their own contemporaries in the Milky Way at the time. And it arguably speeds up the Protheans' own natural evolution.
Right. Right. And then they are able to pass on knowledge that they've gained to this cycle and to Shepard and anyone else who's paying attention. They can use that themselves. Yeah.
And see, that's why I mentioned Elatania earlier, because then now we have evidence of Elatania being the evidence that that the Protheans were doing the same thing, mm-hmm. that they were at least trying to leave behind or monitor the early races of their time. Probably like the Inusannan were.
Yeah.
And this is so interesting because it's like a cyclical nature, just like the Reaper's harvesting is.
Right. I wonder if the Reapers became aware of that, and that's why they show up in that vision. Is that
I think so.
They understand the threat that the Inusannan posed and the benefit it gave the Protheans. And so on the next cycle, they changed their plan a little bit and therefore were visiting races earlier than they would have cared to in previous cycles.
And it's probably not the first time, it's not their first rodeo, right? Because I bet you races before the Inusannan did that with the Inusannan. And it's almost like this handing off of the baton from cycle to cycle so that they can eventually escape this hellish nightmare. And Ilos is such a critical key in that cycle. At the point that we land on Ilos in Mass Effect 1, all we know is that it's covered with quote-unquote Prothean ruins, right? And we go around looking at these statues. But I don't think now, I don't think that these statues are Prothean at all. Yet we're led to believe they are in Mass Effect 1 because that's what the canon lore was. Mm-hmm. These statues look kind of like the space jockey from Alien.
Okay,
right?
Yeah. All right.
But they don't look like Protheans. You know, we find out in Mass Effect 2 that Protheans look like the Collectors because the Collectors are the Protheans.
Right, right.
And they didn't look like this at all. And then Javik tells us in Mass Effect 3 more about Ilos and that the Protheans in Mass Effect 3, you know, leading us to conclude that maybe these statues on Ilos were actually depicting the Inusannan. Or maybe it was a race that was even older than the Inusannan.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, because they don't look like Protheans. Man, that's cool that that much was potentially planned ahead when it came to Mass Effect, even in Mass Effect 1, and the way that plays out. Like, that's really cool.
And you remember we mentioned the Mu relay was shut off, and it made Ilos inaccessible for 4,000 years. Now, I am unclear on this part of the lore. I don't know whether it's specified or not, but I don't think we know who shut off the relay. Since the Reapers created the relays, I would venture to guess it was them. Unless the Ilos researchers found a way to shut off the Mu relay and isolate themselves in an attempt to escape the Reapers.
Yeah.
I forget whether or not that's actually specified. But regardless about these statues that we see on Ilos, I think, there's two options, right? It's a clever retcon in the lore to say that, actually they're not the Protheans because we decided for a different art model.
I have a feeling they didn't really fully design the Protheans until later. And so they were like, well, now those don't match up. And
And I think that that's actually clarified in some of the art books that they didn't have a plan for what the Protheans look like until Mass Effect 2. Or it's just an ingenious writing, from game to game that they would plan this far out. But I think it is more of a clever retcon. Regardless, though, of retcons, the canon lore is the canon lore.
Yeah, however it shakes out in the end, it's fun to speculate about the way we got there, but what it actually becomes in the end is what's important to the story.
Okay, and here's the craziest connection of it all. I promised you that there was going to be like a really crazy kind of finale to talking about Ilos, and this is something that I realized while putting together this episode, and I wanted to save it for the end. Here it is. The Protheans, right, they saved countless generations by their scientists, altering the signal the Keepers made. But they were only able to do this because they learned from the ruins of the Inusannan. And who knows what sacrifices the Inusanin made so that the Protheans could make this one for us. How many other cycles of civilizations sacrificed and made similar amazing breakthroughs over time? All of this leading up just so that Shepard could end the Reaper threat on the Citadel in Mass Effect 3, which is the very place the Reaper invasion was supposed to start.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Like taking it directly to that spot. Yeah.
Yeah. So in a way, it just all comes back to where it should have started, basically. Mm-hmm. And what better representation of that than Ilos? Because Ilos is one of those places where the beginning meets the end. And maybe that's why we all hold the music from Ilos. You know, we saw some people here in chat already mentioning the Vigil track. And that's the same track for listeners of ours of years who listened to the music of Mass Effect episode. Mm-hmm. You remember Pipe Man played Vigil on the bagpipes.
Right. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Maybe this is why we all kind of hold this music for Vigil in such a special place in our hearts, because that plays during the Ilos scene where we talk with Vigil. We heard it in the earlier tracks, and that track just screams Mass Effect, right? And why? Well, it's the one we hear at the beginning of Mass Effect 1, the very beginning before you even start the game. It's in the menus. Mm-hmm. And then we hear it at the very end in Ilos, you know, not the very end, but near the end in Ilos. Only about an hour or two after that of game time until you finish the game. And then when you are done with the game and you go back to the main menu, you hear Vigil again.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just like Ilos, just like all of these cyclical moments of the beginning meeting the end for the cycles. Right. It was so ingeniously planned that way that there's no way that is a coincidence.
Yeah, it was always supposed to be a loop, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then, so that's just one part of my crazy theory. Okay, you want to hear my next crazy theory
it
on
Ilos? It gets even crazier. What?
Bomb!
Wow.
I'll just do my own Inception foghorn. Okay, so this is the most interesting part, in my opinion, right? You remember, we're talking about the researchers. They vanished. They went that one-way trip. Right. We mm-hmm. still don't know what happened to Ilos, how the hell its entire ecosystem just turned to crap. Well, the Ilos's ecology was absolutely devastated. The planet card tells us in the golden age of the Protheans, Ilos was a verdant world dotted with spires and arches of magnificent cities. But even casual observation shows us this is no longer the case. Ilos has been devastated by means unknown. Its entire surface changed to the color of rust. The atmosphere shows heightened levels of oxygen. Wildfires, primarily ignited by lightning strikes, can be seen burning on the other side. But then Vigil tells us that the Reapers retreated back through the relay. So what did it? What led to Ilos having this seismic shift where there can't even be any respirating animal life anymore?
Right, because it's not the Reapers. So what is it?
I think it might be possible that manipulating dark energy to create, say, a miniature one-way mass relay like the conduit could have that effect on the planet where it was created.
Right, right. So it's almost like a Starfield moment.
It is a total Starfield moment. If that's true. Now that's just a theory. I want to be very specific with our listeners. That part is not canon. That is me talking.
It's all speculation. But it's like, hey, maybe we can fit the puzzle pieces together in this way. It doesn't make a picture. Yeah.
But it would make sense, right? Because we have evidence in later parts of Mass Effect that manipulation of dark energy, or at least this was a storyboarded storyline where they thought, okay, manipulating biotics is somehow related to dark energy. And the way that you create biotics and Mass Effect fields is by running electricity through Ezo.
Yeah.
Mass Effect physics is the crucial component of mass relays. And they created a miniature one-way mass relay on Ilos. That's something that had never been done before to our knowledge. And we know that to date, no one has been able to reverse engineer mass relays because they're so advanced.
Right.
But mass relays are never on a planet. They're just floating in space.
They're in space. And that's probably for good reason, because if you put them on a planet, it's probably going to have some sort of, there's going to be a cost there, right? Like it seems too powerful to put in an atmosphere, in an environment where there's life around it. So you put it off in space.
And not just is it in space, but we don't really understand how it's perpetually powered.
Right.
Right?
Right.
And, well, maybe we just don't see the energy source. Dark energy.
Yeah.
Right? And we also know that if you blow one up, like Shepard does in the Arrival DLC, that it completely annihilates, like, a system. I mean, yeah, ask the Batarians. Like, Shepard Fish in chat here says, ask the Batarians how that worked out for them power-wise. And hundreds of thousands of Batarians die when one is blown up. So clearly very powerful pieces of technology. The Prothean researchers managed to create a miniature one planet-side, and then they use it. And then they are the last ones to go through it.
Yeah.
Right. They never come back.
Right. So they weren't worried about maintaining the safety of the planet because nobody's left on the planet.
Well, it was unprecedented. How would they know what would happen to the planet?
Right. Right. But they were willing to take that risk because there wasn't a chance. Even if the worst case scenario and the planet is completely destroyed, there's nobody left to worry about. So.
Right.
It's worth the risk. Yeah.
Yeah, it's worth the risk. And not only is there no one left to worry about, they didn't know if it would actually work. Like, going through it could just instantly kill them.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, that totally and tracks. Yeah.
So the very keys to, like, some of the early era dark energy plot lines may have been hidden within the Ilos planet.
Yeah. If they don't pick up the dark energy plot lines in the next Mass Effect, that I'll be a little bit upset. Like, I want to know more about that stuff, you know?
Yes, absolutely. And I just found it so intriguing that such a critical planet is not just a Prothean ruin, but before that, an Inusanan ruin. It is the perfect representation of the cyclical nature of races, learning more and more by standing on the shoulders of their predecessors.
Yeah.
And giving the next cycle a leg up, a better chance to escape the Reapers. And then they throw in the Vigil track, which is the audio representation of that cyclical nature. And we all love it and identify it as so Mass Effect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good theory. I would love to hear people's thoughts on your theory. If you think Sam's got something here, let us know. If you think you have some evidence that can update this theory a little bit or maybe goes against it, let us know as well, because we're always open to evidence. So the more information you can share with us is just wonderful. So thank you for doing that. Sam, this is a really cool theory.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, it could be rendered completely obsolete because Ilos was so isolated from the rest of the galaxy. So no one was around to see what kind of changes were happening. I could be completely head up my ass wrong. Right.
Right. It's possible.
But, you know, I think it makes sense. At least I'll entertain the thought. Right. And so, but yeah, in the meantime, if anyone wants to catch some of my streams, I'm doing my personal canon playthrough on Saturdays.
Yeah, go check out N7 The Legend on Twitch.
Yes, and gotcha. Twitter.
And Twitter, yeah. And also you can check out my stuff if you're binging the Fallout TV show and you want to know more about the lore of Fallout. I do the Fallout Lorecast. There's almost 300 episodes with lots of answers to questions about Vault Tech and the Brotherhood and what all the vaults are. I go through every single vault and lay out what the experiments were and what was going on with that stuff. So go check that out if you're looking for more content, or just go to robotsradio.net for links to all the different shows from all the different hosts on the network. Lots of awesome stuff for you to check out. Thanks for being here, chat, listeners at home, wherever you are. Thank you for tuning in. We will be back next week. Oh, and by the way, we've got our patron chat coming up next week. So it's just a week away. So patrons, We'll be chatting with you about what we're going to chat about. And if you'd like to sign up, you've got a week still to get in on this next one before we do it. So thanks for being here, everybody, and we'll see you next time. Thanks for tuning into the Mass Effect Lorecast. We'd love to hear your opinion and thoughts on the lore of Mass Effect. Reach out to us on Twitter at Mass Effect Cast, or check out the Robots Radio Discord. Also, you can send us an email at masseffectlorecast@gmail.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.